a house phone here anymore.
Blog Talk Radio.
Eastern Airlines. My name is Neil Holland, the producer of the show. We have a great show for you tonight, but first, we have breaking news on this 20th day of August 2018.
Hours after domestic violence arrest, husband crashes stolen plane into his own home where wife was staying by Alex Stone and Yurita Biswa. Just hours after being arrested and released on bail for allegedly assaulting his wife, a Utah man stole a plane and crashed it into his own home where his wife was staying, police said. The man, 47-year-old Dwayne Ude, did not survive the crash Monday, officials stated. Flames engulfed the house in the city of Payson after the crash and ensuing fire at 2:30 a.m. Yud's wife, as well as a boy, were inside the house at the time of the crash. They were lucky they escaped, and the plane did not hit other buildings or any other power lines, police said.
Cathay Pacific Boeing 777-300 damaged in Rome by Daniel Sander. A Cathay Pacific Boeing 777-300 was damaged yesterday in Rome at Plumicino Airport as it pushed back for its flight back to Hong Kong. The aircraft's right wing hit one of the airport's floodlight poles, causing severe damage to the wingtip. The aircraft involved is a six-year-old 777, which was delivered to the airline back in January 2012. Photos show parts of the aircraft's wing on the ground. Rome Aviation spotters managed to capture the incident, showing the rear section of the raked wingtip partially wrapping the airport's light pole.
Number three, CMM Air's Boeing 737-800 skids off runway in Manila by Airways. A CMI Airlines Boeing 737-800 has skidded off the runway at Manila Ninoy Aquino International Airport in the Philippines. The aircraft's left engine was detached from the wing following the troubled landing. The local news report that a strong thunderstorm passed through the airport at the time of the incident. The Philippines has experienced terrible floods over the last week. AviationSafety.net tells that flight MF-8667 descended to 18,000 feet towards Manila and then entered a holding pattern to the northeast of the airport for about 14 minutes before positioning for an approach to runway 24. Chuck?
I will tell you, future still up in the air by Jean Kemps. It's been over a year since Alitalia's bankruptcy, and nothing's been done to sell off the airlines. Italy is in a precarious political situation with a right-wing, left-wing coalition that looks a bit unlikely to survive in the next 12 months with Lufthansa, EasyJet, Cyprus Capital, and with their all, after all the parts of Alitalia on August 3rd, the new transport minister, Tornelli, decided none of the tabled offers were suitable. The bizarre politics of the left-right coalition has set a series of very difficult priorities, but both agree that 51% of the airline remains government-owned, but not government-run. Breaking news articles you have heard tonight can be found on our website and newsletter online August-December 2018.
Family, it's great having you with us tonight. My name is Jim Hart, and I'm coming to you live from the beautiful island of Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts. I wish you could see all the people here listening to us at this time, along with our other hosts at different locations. We want to welcome and thank you for listening and calling the show. Have truly made us the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. We'd love to hear your comments and share your memories with radio listeners from around the world during this broadcast. If you haven't called the show before, all you have to do is call us on 213-816-1611 and just say, howdy, to talk with us on the air live. We can identify many countries around the world who listen in with our Blog Talk Radio application. Isn't it great that we can keep the Eastern legacy going out to not only the Eastern family, but to Eastern listeners from all different countries around the world? That's what we try to do every week on the EAL radio show. Won't you join us by adding your voice to these broadcasts? Our thanks also to those who choose to listen by computer. Using our radio icon on our homepage at www.EALradioshow.com or perhaps by signing in to the site of our provider, Blog Talk Radio, at www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie. Should you wish to talk during our live broadcast, feel free to use our call-in number, 213-816-1611. At 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Let me repeat that number so you can write it down for your Monday night visits and then tell your friends all about us. 213-816-1611. And don't forget, you can listen to any of our 378 Monday night broadcasts and the 70 Thursday broadcast by simply going to blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie and scrolling down through the archive of broadcasts. Each episode is briefly described. Our lines are open for calls, and if you choose not to participate and talk live with your host, we ask that you please mute your telephone, as our producer does not have the capacity to filter out any background noises. Hosting tonight's show, we have Chuck Albright, Dorothy Gagnon, Don Gagnon, Captain Jim Holder, and Norma Jean Borger. Good evening, hosts. It's good to have you with us.
Yeah, this is Chuck Albright, and I'm calling you The village is Florida, just about 70 miles north of Disney World in Orlando. We're a retirement community, and we're pretty big. We have 150,000 people and 70,000 homes here and 53 golf courses and beautiful weather. Come on down and see us.
Hi, this is Dorothy Gagnon, and I would welcome you to our show. We have a great one for you tonight. And we look forward to any questions that you may have at the end of the show. So look forward to hearing from you.
This is Don Gagnon, and don't touch that dial, folks, since we've got a great show for you tonight.
Jim Holder here. Welcome aboard.
Good, Jim. It's good to have you all with us. Now, Mr. Producer, I see we are number one in the lineup for takeoff from Atlanta, Hartsfield, Jackson, International Airport. So let's get flight episode 379 in the air.
Tower Blue, respect 50, Volt, 50, 27 left, Fiddleland, 230, 20.
Eastern 379, the winds are from the east at 5-10 miles per hour. You're cleared for takeoff, runway 9
heading south of 15-16. We are doing our best. 35 every day.
Roger, Eastern 379er. We're on a roll.
McGee, I'm glad you're the senior flight attendant tonight. Have you flown any trips on these new Airbus 400 airplanes? This is my first line trip. I got turned loose last week in the simulator, and I feel a little, just a little apprehensive with me being the only pilot in this big bird.
No, this is my first trip, too. I almost called crew schedule to tell them I was too sick to fly, but then I figured it was going to happen sooner or later. So here we are, two lonely people, as the song goes. However,
well, your flight attendant just dropped off. And Dorothy, would you finish up? I think you're next to Norma Jean Seniority. Go ahead.
However, I do have eight others keeping me company and working the flight. Can't believe these new Airbus 400s carry so many people.
Well, I have three empty jump seats up front if you want to come up and visit after you finish your cabin service. And I would definitely enjoy the conversation for no other reason to keep me from getting too bored. My first officer, Bubba, will be sitting in an air-conditioned room back in Atlanta watching and listening to everything I do or say. He or she, well, I hope it's a he, will confirm my actions in the cockpit. But we'll talk more about this on the flight, okay?
Well, I see Norma Jean is back with us. Hello, Norma Jean.
She's scared of this new airplane with no pilot.
I think she is. Dorothy?
At least I won't be serving him or her a crew meal or a coffee during the flight. I see they have eliminated a lot of your switches, gauges, glass screens, handle, and lights. Maybe I could fly the plane if you get too bored or worse, sick. Do you remember the old automats in New York? Put your nickel, dime, or quarter in, then lift the little glass door and pull out your food of choice? Well, it's not quite that automated, but they sure have incorporated lots of automatic features. I'm really thinking about retiring.
Yeah, me too. This airplane is nearly 100% electronic now, and we do have some weather. We got to go through it between here and New York. I certainly don't need any electrical storms tonight. What with all this electronic stuff?
I wonder if all this automation, go ahead.
It's because they can fill the cockpit and cabin with pilots and mechanics. And, oh, by the way, how are you feeling, Captain?
Well, Norma Jean, I feel fine. And I'm sure automation has something to do with it. But the shortage of pilots is a greater concern. The numbers are staggering, to say the least. In the next 20 years, the world's airlines will need, if my information is correct, 637,000 new pilots. And the largest need of all is for flight attendants, which Boeing estimates will need 839,000 within the next 20 years. Amazing. Although modern aircraft such as the 787 Dreamliner require less maintenance than the other airplane, Boeing still estimates that we'll need 648,000 maintenance guys or gals. We're going to be needing them. Now, I got these numbers in ground school a few weeks ago, and I guess our union representatives are going to make a stand on this minimum crew nonsense.
That's right, Captain. Boeing in the commercial aviation industry, as you said, would need that 637,000 new pilots worldwide between now and 2036. That boils down to over 87 pilots a day, or four pilots every hour. Lots of luck on that. Why so many new pilots? There are two reasons. First, the airlines are adding a bunch of new airplanes to support the growing market demand, in addition to replacing older, less efficient airplanes. Naturally, the more planes you have, the more pilots you need. Airline pilots also have a maximum working age of 65, so retirees will have to be replaced. And Boeing said airlines will need to order 41,030 airplanes between now and 2036, valued at approximately $6.1 trillion. That's at 25,530 of those new planes will be single-aisle airplanes, similar to the Boeing 737 that we have now. As of July 18th, Boeing has a backlog of 5,744 airplanes to build. Norma Jean, are you there?
Yes. Hopefully by now everyone understands that flight attendants aren't just there to serve you food and beverages. After all, modern planes can fly with two pilots. But the government requires a flight attendant for every 50 passengers that the plane can hold. For example, Southwest Airlines has to staff four flight attendants on its 737-800, which holds 175 passengers. The flight attendants don't have a maximum age limit here in the U.S., and some have served beyond age 80. But in other countries, airlines are allowed to discriminate on the grounds of age, marital status, and the physical shape of flight attendants. And until those policies are gone, the flight attendant position will remain more of a temporary job rather than a career in some parts of the world, resulting in a high turnover rate and the continual need for more professionals to fill these positions. As Delta Airlines combs through the resumes to fill 1,000 new flight attendants jobs in 2019, some have weathered the storms for decades. Three Delta employees who rank in the top 10 of the company's most senior flight attendants share the love of flying and the job that has kept them in the air for more than 50 years. As young women in the era of the Beatles, the Kennedy administration, and the early stages of the space race, they each combined an interest in flight with the desire to work, and none of them are ready to give up on either.
Well, Norma Jean, aircraft maintenance technicians, AMTs, aren't only needed when something on a plane breaks. Preventative maintenance is necessary as well. The required checks account for most of the time an aircraft will spend out of service throughout its life cycle. Depending on the age and the type of the plane, along with what needs to be checked, a plane that is functioning perfectly may be out of service anywhere from a few hours to a few weeks. Planes can also spend extra time out of service when an airline decides to upgrade its interior fixtures, such as seats or in-flight entertainment systems. These upgrades are often done during during the most intensive maintenance checks. Now, in 2017 through 2036 time frame, once again, the growth will be led by the Asian Pacific region, which will need 256,000 ATMs in the next 20 years. Because of new experience level required by the FAA, and executives at regional airlines such as United, Express, American Eagle, and Delta Connection tend to dislike new rules regarding first officers who have 1,500 hours of flight before they can fly a commercial airline. But let's not forget the rule was implemented for a reason. We need experienced pilots. The Associated Press reports the committee voted a few days ago to make the recommendations to the Federal Aviation Administration, including one on airline pilot qualifications. The committee said it was offering the recommendations in response to President Donald Trump's directives to cut government regulations. The committee was formed by the FAA and meets under its auspices. Regional airlines have been fighting the pilot qualifications rule since it was adopted by the FAA in response to a sweeping aviation law passed by Congress after the last fatal flight of a U.S. passenger airline. Lawmakers said at the time they were concerned about reports in the wake of the crash of Cologne Flight 3407 in February 2009 near Buffalo, New York, that some rapidly growing regional airlines were hiring first officers with far less experience than pilots of major airlines. All 49 passengers on board and a man on the ground were killed after the plane captain responded incorrectly to safety systems, causing the plane to stall. Before that crash, airlines were allowed to hire first officers with as few as 250 hours of flying experience. Airlines would then move first officers into a captain's seat as soon as they had a minimum of 1,500 hours flying experience. After the crash, the requirements were changed so that a minimum of 1,500 hours were needed for the first officers as well as the captains, leading more than experienced first officers.
Don, the report recommends permitting pilots with less than 1,500 hours to qualify for an air transport license to fly passenger-carrying planes if they receive academic training from their airlines. Airlines say the current rule is exasperating a pilot shortage that has caused some regional airlines to cancel flights. The problem, they say, is it can cost a prospective pilot as much as to pay for their license as you would a four-year college education to require the greater flying hours they now need to qualify for an air transport license. As a result, fewer people are willing to pursue careers as pilots. Airline Pilots Union and safety advocates say that the problem is the regional airlines and that they don't pay high enough for entry-level salaries to attract as many pilots as they needed. Airline Pilots Association International said in a dissenting comment appended to the report that it opposes the change. It says pilot supplies in the United States remain strong. Dorothy?
Chuck, a group of representing the families of victims of the Colgan crash said in a statement last week that regional airlines have taken their case to the advisory panel to bypass the legislative process where they have run into considerable resistance. In June, the Senate Commerce Committee passed a bill that included a provision allowing prospective airline pilots to substitute academic training for flying hours. Opposition to the provision from Democrats have prevented Republicans from bringing the bill to the floor for a vote. The Pilots Union has said the provision would lead to a pilot puppy mills. The report also includes recommendations on changes to safety regulation for airliners. These changes would affect a myriad rules, including those governing the strength of hinges, emergency exit markings, and whether ashtrays should be required in restrooms since smoking isn't allowed on planes.
Now, with all that's happening in the airlines industry today, comes news this month that tens of thousands of pilots for United Airlines, Southwest Airlines, and American Airlines, and nearly 50 other commercial airlines raised their collective voices today and said no way to a bill that's now before the United States Congress with a provision in it authorizing the FAA to launch a research and development program for single-pilot all-cargo flights. The operative phrase there is single-pilot, an operating option that has sent a collective chill down the of commercial airline pilots who fear that if cargo flights are allowed to operate with just one pilot, then commercial passenger flights could be the next. The bill before Congress states that remote piloting or computer piloting technology would be used in conjunction with the single pilot in the cockpit manning the plane. But pilots say that such an approach to flying a commercial aircraft doesn't take into account everything that happens in a cockpit, including interacting with air traffic control, communicating with dispatch, checking weather conditions, and visually scanning for other aircraft, and monitoring the engines and fuel, among their other responsibilities. What's even worse, during non-routine situations, think engine explosion, for instance, the workload in the cockpit can very suddenly increase exponentially. That is why pilots are sending a message to Congress that a cockpit needs to be manned with two well-trained, fully qualified pilots, not just one. As noted by Dan Carey, president of Allied Pilots Association, which represents more than 15,000 pilots who work for American Airlines, which is the world's largest airline, quote, given the threat posed by computer hacking and accident rates for autonomous vehicles and military and civilian drones, it's astonishing that these policymakers would even consider this notion, unquote. And added Pedro Leroy, president of NetJets Association of Shared Aircraft Pilots, that represents 2,700 plus pilots who fly for NetJets Aviation. The two-person flight deck model exists not for the sake of redundancy, but to promote safety through shared decision-making and communication. Firebrand John Weeks, president of the Southwest Airlines Pilots Association, he underscored the most important concern about flying a commercial aircraft with just one pilot in the cockpit. Air travel has never been safer. In fact, 2017 was the safest year in aviation history. And yet, the United States Congress is attempting to pass legislation that would allow operators to eliminate one of the most vital safety features of commercial aviation, two pilots in the cockpit.
Norma Jean, airline pilots are bristling at the suggestion that the nation's pilot shortage can be solved by a transition to single-pilot cockpits, calling the plan an attack on safety and urging Congress to act. The Airline Pilots Association, ALPA, wants the House to strike that language from Graf FAA reauthorization legislation calling for research into a single-pilot cargo aircraft, describing the move as an assault on air safety. The two-pilot cockpit, ALPA argues, is a key component of the safety infrastructure that makes U.S. Commercial Aviation so safe? Nevertheless, the provision that would fund a study of single-pilot operation of cargo aircraft remains on the table as part of the bill now awaiting a Senate vote. Last week, ALPA, which represents more than 60,000 pilots at 34 airlines, asked its members to contact members of Congress and the Senate to express opposition, writing on its Facebook page, quote, "We must ensure there are always two pilots in aircraft. We will never compromise safety, the core mission and vision of ALPA and our pilots since 1931, end quote. ALPA argues that remote pilots on the ground would not be able to interact with pilots in the air in a manner that promotes effective cockpit resource management. Airlines, meanwhile, envision a future where single-pilot airlines fly the skies with automated systems and remote humans ready to take over in the case of an emergency. In a recent speech, ALPA President Tim Kunal said, quote, "At the 11th hour, and with no advance notice, a dangerous provision was inserted into the House FAA reauthorization bill by the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee to push for single-piloted and computer-piloted operation of cargo airliners. This is an attack on our profession, passengers, and cargo operations alike," end quote. Next week, about 150 ALPA members from across the U.S. will descend upon Capitol Hill for ALPA's annual legislative summit on June 10th through the 13th to voice their opposition to single-pilot commercial air carrier operations. Don?
Well, we don't want to alarm anyone, but it's now more than theoretically possible than ever before that you could one day be flying on a commercial airline flight with only one single pilot, and that pilot could die during flight. Oh, my God. Not to overemphasize this remote possibility, we are simply keeping you informed of the ever-growing, thought statistically small, chance that your remote airline, your routine airline flight could one day be flown by only one pilot, without any co-pilot in the cockpit at all, and to everyone's shock, that pilot could suffer a sudden heart attack or stroke while at 35,000 feet. And who's going to save you now? Sure, some computer. Okay? Only some computer program stands between you and a fiery death plunging into the unforgiving earth at hundreds of miles per hour. We're just informing you this because it could happen in your lifetime. Information is power. The Wall Street Journal reports that NASA is formally studying the possibility of one day having a single-pilot airline flight. God is your co-pilot, as well as a computer software on the ground. Here is the essence of that idea.
Don, under the concept the researchers are studying, aviators on the ground could be assigned to assist solo cockpit pilots on multiple flights, virtually co-piloting during the busiest times through crowded airspace, approaching and landing maneuvers, or if something goes wrong, it's a reasonable new area to study how the notion may apply to large jets, according to Perry Mutual Copper-Decker, the program's manager based at NASA's Ames Research Center in Northern California. When pilots need a mid-air rest or bathroom break, those on the ground even may need to babysit in the vehicle, he said. In this age of driverless cars, automated banking, and ubiquitous drones, It would be downright illogical and anticipated to obsess over the possibility, however remote, of our role, our sole human pilot's mid-air demise, followed by one of those computer errors that are always happening, combining to doom you to a hellbound flight to nowhere, in which you are condemned to ride in an uncontrolled plane for hours until its fuel runs out and it plunges to a final deadly resting place, a nightmarish period in which there are little for you to do except to contemplate your own looming violent demise. That is statistically unlikely. NASA is advancing an airliner flight deck of the future that features one seat in the cockpit for a captain and one on the ground occupied by an operator filling the role of either super dispatcher or first officer. The research, while rife with political and public ramifications that could far outweigh the technical challenges, is far less science fiction than it was 3 years ago.
Thank you, Jim Hart. Under the single pilot understanding for distribution simulated programs, the team will research the crew capacity, ground and flight deck resource management, physiological monitoring techniques, and automation needed to make the SPO viable. In addition to addressing technical certification and policy issues that will emerge, Rockwell Collins will also use its live virtual constructive technologies to enable distribution simulators of SPOs, in which participants will use a mix of simulators and potentially, in 5 years, live aircraft and the dispersed geographic regions to test a scenario. The company will also experiment with its voice input and synthesis technology for the workstation. The state of art in the SPOs is a product of nearly 20 years fundamental research on distributed flight deck operation work begun. It was in the mid-1990s with NASA's Advent air traffic management concept for free flight. A system would allow airlines to choose their own flight path. Research was directed as the human center error tolerant automation to enable decision making between pilots, controllers, dispatchers, and for gate-to-gate planning. Dorothy.
Well, Chuck, you know, now here it is how it's supposed to work. In SPO-3, the CONOPS revolved around a special two-position ground control station where the operator, when sitting in the right seat, fills the role of a super dispatcher for as many as 12 single-pilot airliners in cruise flight. If one of the 12 aircraft enter an off-nominal state due to an issue or anomaly, the ground station operator moves to the left seat and becomes a ground-based first officer dedicated to that aircraft. NASA's Langley Research Center is focused on the airborne solution for SPO. NASA decided to keep the ground station separate from air traffic control. We conceive this is a way of supporting operations from the airline's perspective, says Walt Johnson. Research psychologist and lead for the Flight Deck Display Research Laboratory at NASA Ames. Everything that we are doing is trying to keep this as transparent and seamless to air traffic control as possible. It's a big challenge to try and add or change air traffic control roles. Why 12 aircraft per super dispatcher? Johnson says researchers arrived at that number by visiting airline operations centers and talking to dispatchers, watching the number of aircraft they handle on a daily basis. An important part of the SBO-3 study was to find out whether we should start out with pilots or whether we should start with dispatchers for the ground operator. And what are the required skills, says Vernal Batiste, a senior research psychologist with San Jose State University working on the project. Pilots in the previous study, the SBO-2, made their desires clear. I need someone on dedicated support that has been where I've been, that can feel what I feel and know what the issues are, said Batista of the pilots' input. We decided to go with pilots initially and train them to be dispatchers. Batista says the amount of dispatcher knowledge needed for the study was relatively modest.
Dorothy, the NASA SPO ground station provides the connectivity tools and substantial awareness aids that allow the operator in the super dispatcher role to manage the same number of aircraft as today, but with valued added functions during normal operations. By having an aircraft's flight plan, weather, and other data feeds, the super dispatcher can use the workstation tools to suggest route changes to gain more favorable upper atmosphere winds or avoid turbulence, and send the suggestions directly to the aircraft in a format for direct insertion into the flight management system, FMS, upon the captain's concurrence. A key element of the ground control station enabling the new functionality is the NASA-developed cockpit situation display, CSD, a multifunction screen that depicts aircraft positions, routes, and hazards, including terrain, predictive weather, hazard advisories, and air traffic in 2D or 3D on the screen. The CSD also includes a pulse predictor, light pulses among the routes of nearby aircraft that allow the position of each of going forward in time, an indicator of potential traffic conflicts on the new route the super dispatcher might be contemplating. The pulse predictor also shows the movement of weather to determine if a route will remain clear of storms. In addition, to configure contingencies, the CONOPS calls for a ground operator take the first officer's role during certain portions of a flight where teamwork is critical, individual, including arrivals, departures, and taxiing. Given the variety of local terrain, weather, and airspace issues, NASA is also considering a, quote, harbor pilot, ground controller, who would take over from the super dispatcher at the top of descent point down to the gate.
Dom, you know, in normal operations, the super dispatcher is there to watch the operations and offer advice or help for the pilot. In a contingency, which has to be triggered by the captain, the super dispatcher transitions into dedicated support mode as a first officer in the left seat of the ground station. The pilot and first officer then conduct a briefing over an open microphone loop to assign duties, including who will fly the aircraft. The first officer flies via inputs to the auto flight system in the mode control panel representation in the ground control station. The super dispatcher can then brief the captain about information available in the ground station, including the most viable diversion choices given the environmental conditions and aircraft's physical state. A new ground station capability introduced in the SPO-3 is the Emergency Landing Planner, or ELP as they call it. Originally designed by the Intelligence Systems Division at Ames as an emergency landing spot finder for an aircraft that had been damaged, ELP will recommend the best diversion airport given the weather and the conditions at the various candidate airports. Quote, it's not going to land the aircraft for the pilot, end quote, says Johnson, but it will optionally devise a flight plan for them and can send an FMS update. One issue pilots in the SBO-3 noted about ELP was that the software did not indicate its logic in selecting the best alternative. Johnson says NASA is working with Air Force Research Laboratory on a new version that will generate an explanation of its choice for the pilot or ground operator. The NASA-developed cockpit situation display provides a 3D graphic of current and future weather, traffic, and obstacles along an aircraft's route. The latest CONOPS pedigree comes from lessons learned in the earlier SPO-1 and the SPO-2 studies. As part of the SPO-1, which used only desktop simulators, NASA separated the captains and the first officers with nothing but an open microphone for coordination. Quote, we flew them through some highly challenging off-nominal scenarios, weather, wheel well fires, and diversions, end of quote, says Johnson. Quote, we saw how well two people could manage one aircraft when they weren't sitting right next to each other. We didn't put any technologies in to make it easier because we wanted to see where the problems were, end of quote.
Dorothy, researchers determined that there were crew resource management, CRM, issues when the pilots were separated. For instance, there were times of momentary confusion about who was the pilot flying. We designed a set of CRM tools and other mitigations to try and address this, says Johnson. Along with those CRM tools, SPO-2 featured the first-generation ground control station with separated pilots flying more challenging scenarios. One aid gives the captain or the ground-based first officer a dedicated display for recognizing new inputs to the aircraft's heading, speed, and altitude through a mode control panel, which either pilot can perform in a dedicated mode. When the captain inputs a speed change, for example, the equivalent field on the first officer's display flashes the new information. In a two-pilot cockpit, the first officer would point to the information to confirm the change. In this case, the first officer uses the open microphone to confirm along with touching the field on the screen, which the captain would do as well on a dedicated display in the cockpit. In SPO-2, they found that by putting in the checks, the frequency of verbal communications went up, says Johnson. Researchers also found that the experiment that an aircraft in trouble required a dedicated ground operator. They belong to the captain. They can no longer support those other aircraft, says John. SPO-3 investigated two concepts related to the role of the ground operator. In one scenario, the super dispatcher managing 12 aircraft transitioned into a dedicated mode as first officer for a problem aircraft, passing off the others. And in the other scenario, the super dispatcher kept the 11 nominal aircraft passing off the problem aircraft to a specialist. Input from pilots showed the two scenarios to be roughly equivalent, which surprised Johnson. We thought that holding on to the original aircraft and handing off the rest, you would have more situational awareness, and that would be better, he said. To the extent we found anything, we found that when they went into dedicated mode with one aircraft, they had a hard time forgetting about the other 11, especially if there was an impending task. In future studies, NASA is planning to investigate some type of psychological or physiological monitoring of the captain, along with a video feed already installed for SPO-3. Ground operators found the video showing the captain's seat and the control panel in dedicated support mode to be, quote, somewhat useful, end quote, for inferring the pilot's action. A similar video feed on the super dispatcher position was totally useless. as that operator uses a mouse. Monitoring for the captain would include alerting for non-responsiveness. However, the threshold for the ground controllers taking over the aircraft when not in a dedicated mode would be necessarily high, as the captain remains in charge of the safety of the flight and the SPO canops. Is he sleeping? Is he dead? Or is he gone into oxygen deprivation? And he thinks he's fine and the bluebirds are flying around the cockpit, says Johnson. The person on the ground, if he sees these monitors going off, he can hook in and say, how you doing? I like the part where it says totally.
How did all these people get in my room? Come fly with me, we'll fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come on.
I had to throw that one in. That's the end of our show. So thank you very much to our hosts. And right now I'd like to have a discussion going about your thoughts about single pilot operation. I certainly hope that ALPA and the other pilots associations join together and they prevent this. What's your thoughts, Jim Holder, about the effectiveness of ALPA and the unions to put this type of thinking away? Because it sounds absolutely ridiculous to me.
It is absolutely ridiculous. It is stupid. And I hope that ALPA and the thinking people in the FAA get this thing stopped quick. It's ridiculous, ridiculous. I could sit here and tell you two or three instances that I was so glad I had two people with me to share the task that we had in front of us, and to be up there by myself with some voice from somebody who might not have the faintest clue what's going on. End of story.
Absolutely.
Hey, Neil.
Yeah, Chuck.
I was just wondering, since I was watching this very closely, if the super dispatcher is managing 12 aircraft and one of them needs some kind of problem solving, and he slips into the first officer's seat, and then he's got 11 other normal aircraft that he just passed off the problem to the passed off aircraft. Are you going to have 11 of these guys sitting in seats, and each one of those planes that have a problem jumps up and takes one of the other guys? It would kind of be like musical chairs, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it sounds like. And, you know, to save one seat in the airplane, I mean, to do away with one seat in the airplane, how many seats on the ground are you adding? And just how cost-effective is this silly program? Absolutely silly.
It
ridiculous. I don't even think it's Star Trek.
And he's got 12 seats, and there's like 12 other dispatchers. You're talking, what, 144 seats up there?
Norma Jean, did I hear your voice?
Yes, I said that whole thing is nutsy cuckoo.
It is.
I like some of the changes that they want to make. I think some of this stuff is really great, but I sure as hell don't think they should have one guy sitting up there. I agree with everybody. You need two people in that cockpit all the time.
And one of them, if it's only two pilots, then they have a flight attendant go up there. That's the law now, I think, worldwide, after what happened over in that German airliner where the captain got locked out and the co-pilot flew it into the mountain. And probably, I can't say for sure, that may have what happened to the flight that's down in the South Pacific somewhere that they can't find. That you had to have, you never know, somebody could have a tumor in their head and think they're Superman. I don't know. It's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. The whole thing is ridiculous.
I wonder how much money is spent on this.
Karen Black flew a 747 back in the 60s.
What was that?
How comfortable would you feel having You have 12 planes that you're watching, and all of a sudden someone's in trouble, and you pass the 11 to the other guy. Does the other guy have 11 or 12 that he's taken care of already? So now he would have 20 or 22. How does that work? Somebody has to be sitting around doing nothing, waiting for a plane to be in trouble to be hit, you know, take a, somebody else's 11 planes. It doesn't make any sense.
But it does this, to somebody because they think cost effective.
Yeah.
Well, if you have to pay 11 people sitting there and you have to pay two people in the plane, wouldn't it be better to have somebody on hands rather than somebody that's sitting somewhere on a computer? And let me tell you, computers are notorious for being error. They have lots of errors. They have freezing. They have a lot of things that can go wrong. If you're any kind of a computer expert at all, you know the problems that you can run into. And God forbid if that happens, what do you do down there waiting for a guy to back you up?
Yeah, Norma Jean?
How can we get this before the American public real quick?
Evidently, it's caught up in the local, in the national news, and nobody's really gotten real excited about it yet until somebody actually puts their name on that bill. That's going to be the problem.
Okay, Jim
Holtz. I tell you, Neil, if this were to happen, you better go out and get all your money out of the bank and invest it in railroads and ocean lines, because nobody's going to be flying these airplanes. They're going to be running around either.
You got it, Jim.
Yeah.
I got an area code here from 631. Area code 631. Who we got?
You got Frank signaling.
Hey, Frank, where are you calling from? New York?
Yeah. 631.
Okay, very good. Yeah, we got some area codes here. Did you call in with a comment, Frank?
Well, I used to talk, and I had a bad operation, and I'm in a rehab place now.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry to hear that. I hope you're feeling better.
I hope I feel better soon, so.
Very good. Another one in Atlanta. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Atlanta.
No?
Neil, I just... If supposing this all does happen, okay, does each individual airline have to do this, or can they still keep two guys in the cockpit? Or do they have to go by the one?
They're going to use it as a hammer in court. That's what they're going to do. They might not be required, but they're going to be hustled into court. That's what's going to happen. Either that or Boeing's only going to put one cockpit seat up there.
I think the guy that thought this up must have been on some kind of happy weed.
He sure wasn't in the airline business.
This whole discussion of this whole thing is just here. They ought to just forget about it. An airline president is going to go out there and buy these multi-million-dollar, $40 million airplanes now. And have it go chasing off with just one pilot in there.
It's ridiculous.
A whole fleet of those, you could go. It's unbelievable.
I think
the guy that suggested this was a garbage collector on New York's Long Island.
The only place for a single pilot is in a Cessna 150 or a J3 Cub.
Yeah, there you go.
It just doesn't
Sometimes
make any sense.
Sometimes you think you
whatsoever.
Need another one.
Yeah. Well,
it's going to come down to money. It's going to come down to money. If you're talking about an airplane, it's a cost. Most of the big airplanes today coming out of Boeing and Airbus and everything, they're pushing right up to almost $1 billion. That's a lot to put into an airplane when your prospect of turning out 50 to 100 airplanes in a 10 or 15 year period to make a profit. So I'm sure, just like you said, if I was the CEO of Airbus or any of the other ones, I'd look at it and say, you're going to take my billion-dollar airplane and have one guy fly it and he gets sick off of crab meat? And that's, you know.
And not only that, just think of all, we've had a few programs on these microbursts. Just think of a microburst happening with nobody at the controls and someone even not knowing what's going on the ground. How does that work?
Well, supposedly,
you go put the plane with a dump truck.
Well, Neil, let me tell you, I don't want us to get into war stories, okay? But I think I mentioned earlier, and Chuck will remember when that flap track broke and that flap came out at 29,500 feet in a climb. I'm glad I had two guys with me because we were overwhelmed with what the hell is going on, and I had to calm down a flight attendant come flying through the cockpit. What the blankety blank was that? And all the 177 people back there scared to death want the captain to come on and tell them what was going on when I didn't know, and the whole airplane was shaking and vibrating. And we're trying to slow it down and get it down. And I could just see that happening with one person up there and some guy sitting in a recliner somewhere that had – I'm just going to say I ain't going to talk about it anymore. Y'all talk about it.
Well, you know, the guy in the recliner's got a beer in his hand, so he's not worried about it.
Well, this is enough of show. This is enough about talking about nonsense, and we should have titled this like a Seinfeld episode, "The Show About Nothing." And
there you go.
This is really nothing.
There you go.
And I don't think this will ever get off the drawing board. I hope it doesn't. Or either we've got. I don't know what the thinking is.
Well, they're probably spending millions of dollars just researching this. What a waste of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the millions are going to spend. You know, but the problem is only the people that know anything about the business, like the pilots and the mechanics and the flight attendants and the people that work inside the buildings and everything that's in with the airlines, they're the only ones that know the tragedies have happened in the past that could happen in the future. And evidently, they're not listening to those people.
Yeah.
I mean,
if NASA is investigating the difference with monitoring a captain, why haven't they started to use it in some of the spaceships going up? Look at all the people that they have to monitor a spaceship. Would they ever consider of having a spaceship with one person working all of those controls? I mean, that it just, the whole thing doesn't make any sense.
It's stupid.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
In my place here, they're starting, Uber's starting the autonomous cars in the villages in the next month or two. I just keep thinking of the autonomous car that they got in the accident. I think it was in New York where the lady got killed. And that's because, and they had somebody sitting in the seat. Except the car didn't react fast enough because it wasn't programmed to react fast enough for somebody coming in on the right side, only for if you come in at the front. What happens to something like that in an airplane that's only programmed to do a certain thing and something else happens that it's not programmed into the airplane?
Yeah.
You know, a good example of that was that driver doing the test drive all around the United States about 2 years ago, and we saw him on television. He was talking about it. Well, an 18-wheeler pulled out in front of him, and the sensor thought it was just clouds or something, and he went right in there and got killed. And that was a test car. And the test drivers.
Yeah.
What happens when a big white truck comes in front of you? You don't think it's the sky or the clouds or something, and it just kept going right on at 50 miles an hour.
Well, guys and gals, it's been interesting talk about nothing, but hopefully that's as far as it'll get. But we're going to kind of ease into something else that Dorothy wants to tell us about today, or was it yesterday, Dorothy?
Well, yesterday in 1939, President Franklin Roosevelt proclaimed August 19 to be National Aviation Day. The day coincides with the birthday of Orville Wright, who piloted the Wright Flyer. He and his brother Wilbur are given credit for building the world's first successful airplane with aircraft controls that enabled them to steer the plane. Orville Wright made the first flight for 12 seconds and 120 feet around the site of the Wright Brothers National Memorial on December 17, 1903. They were not the first to build and fly experimental aircraft, but they are the first to invent aircraft controls that made fixed-wing flight possible. The Wright brothers' status as inventors of the airplane has been an issue of debate, particularly as they were competing claims regarding other early aviators. Another national observation in the United States is the Wright Brothers' Day, and that happens to be on December 17th each year. So we'll look forward to December 17th and reading about that one. But one thing I would like to mention tonight is we have received another donation from one of our members, Frederick Kruger of Albuquerque, New Mexico, and we want to thank him immensely for his contribution to our program. We have placed his name on our website under the sponsor tab, along with our REAPA sponsor and other members who have sent in donations to assist us. And all of those donations help to keep the legacy of Eastern Airlines going. So we want to thank you all very, very much. Another item I'd like to discuss is don't forget about this big band era we do every other Thursday. We have Don Gagnon and Neil that plays the big bands. And you can listen to the big band series that are coming along. They'll all be up on the Blog Talk Radio. So you can listen to any of them up there. And episode 10 of the Old Time Radio Systems series. We featured the Swing to the Harry James Orchestra on August 9th, and that was great, so you may want to go in there and listen to that. We also have some other future shows coming up. We have the author of Fly Girls on August 27th, that's Keith O'Brien, and we're looking forward to having Keith on the show and to discussing his new book. Following with the From the Eastern Files, which is the other Thursday when they're not playing the big bands. Just keep in mind also that on September 3rd, we are not going to have a program because it's Labor Day, and the day before we'll all be getting ready to leave for the REAPA convention, which is September 4th to September 6th. But we will be September 5th, we're going to have the convention, a program from the convention right on site. So that will be another good listen for all of you to take up. We have coming up also in September, we have What Happens to My Luggage, and followed by the EAL Radio Show Hall of Fame. And then another author that we have of The Escape Artist, and that is author Neil Bascom, and that's going to be in October. So we have a lot of things planned for you folks. So keep tuned on this every single Monday night, and we'll be bringing you a great program. Back to you, Neil.
Tower Blur is 650 volt, if I'm 50, 27 left, Little Land, 230 or 20. 7 left, Blur is 650. 29 right turn, ground sign.
707-270 heading south of 1516. Eastern 379, you're clear to land on runway 27 right. That's a beautiful aircraft you're flying there. Say, it says here on my screen that it's an Airbus A400. How do you like it?
Well, I'm going to lie and say I love it. The only problem is that I'm literally flying this beauty solo. My Bubba is sitting somewhere in a lazy boy chair. No one here to laugh at my joke. That's a big problem. Anyhow, I just knocked off scalder pilot off. I'm going to see how this baby lands manually.
Okay, Roger. Eastern 379. You're cracking us up here up in the control tower. You should be, it should be a normal, a beautiful grease job, right, Captain?
Well, I don't know. Without my Bubba, I don't make no promises.
All right, you're clear to land.
Thank you. We're bringing it in. We hell, it's just me.
in the industry, we say, you really greased it in. And that's our show for tonight, folks. We thank you all for participating. It's a nice broadcast. And especially our listeners. With this, we take a line from the stories of Lake Wobegon. And we, where all Eastern women are unequaled, all the Eastern men are good-looking, and all the Eastern children and Eastern grandchildren are way above average and not brats at all. Until then, we say, oh, good night, Eastern family. We love you, and we look forward to being with you next week.
Good night, Eastern family.
We love you.
Good night, Eastern.
We love you, Eastern.
Good night.
Thanks, everyone.